Hello, everyone.
I'm Carl.
And I'm Em.
Welcome to our podcast discussing all of the latest books. This is season 2, episode 10, and today we are discussing I'm Glad My Mom Died by Jeanette McCurdy. As always, we will save our ratings until the very end.
We promise to give you all of our honest opinions on all the characters, chapters, and scenarios. We don't mean any harm to any of the authors. This is solely our opinion. And as always, we promise to Carl Em like we read them.
Period. Quite a bit of heavy topics in this book. Here's a list of trigger warnings. Be sure to do your research before you dive in, because this is definitely a book that could be very triggering for a couple different topics. So make sure you take care of yourself. There are references to addiction, drug use, alcoholism, body shaming, cancer, child abuse, chronic illness, death, death of a parent, domestic violence, eating disorders, emotional abuse, fat phobia, mental illness, panic attacks and disorders, OCD, physical abuse, terminal illness, grief, blood, vomit, self-harm, suicidal thoughts. There is anything that could be triggering is probably in this. And some details in the book are very graphic. We're probably not going to go into super great detail in our episode, but the book itself is graphic. I will say that it's done in a very good way. It's not like, obviously it's an autobiography, so it's not done for effect like people use in fantasy. Be sure to take care of yourself. This is definitely a book that could send people spiraling. And as always, spoilers will lie ahead.
Yeah, so if you don't want to hear how this book ends, please pause here, go read the book, and come back to this episode. I would highly recommend listening to the audiobook because Jeanette actually reads the book herself. It was really interesting to hear it from her own mouth.
It's a very intimate experience. Mm-hmm. It's almost like she's sitting next to you telling you her life story.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Are you ready to get started?
Let's get into it. The blurb for this lovely book is this. Jeanette McCurdy was 6 years old when she had her first acting audition. Her mother's dream was for her only daughter to become a star, and Jeanette would do anything to make her mother happy. So she went along with what her mom called calorie restriction, eating little and weighing herself 5 times a day. She endured extensive at-home makeovers while mom chided, "Your eyelashes are invisible, okay? You think Dakota Fanning doesn't tint hers?" She was even showered by mom until age 16 and was also forced to share her diaries, emails, and entire income. In I'm Glad My Mom Died, Jeanette recounts all of this in unflinching detail. Just as she chronicles what happens when the dream finally comes true, cast in a new Nickelodeon series called iCarly, she is thrust into fame. Though mom is ecstatic, emailing fan club moderators and getting on a first-name basis with the paparazzi, "Hi, Gail," Jeanette is riddled with anxiety, shame, and self-loathing, which manifest into eating disorders, addiction, and a series of unhealthy relationships. These issues only get worse when, soon after taking the lead in the iCarly spinoff Sam and Cat alongside Ariana Grande, her mother dies of cancer. Finally, after discovering therapy and quitting acting, Jeanette embarks on recovery and decides for the first time in her life what she really wants. Told with refreshing candor and dark humor, I'm Glad My Mom Died is an inspiring story of resilience, independence, and the joy of shampooing your own hair. It is told in unflinching detail, and it is with refreshing candor and dark humor. Before we had read it, I've been told multiple times, you have to read it. I was scared it wasn't going to live up to the hype.
Mm-hmm.
It 1,000% lived up to the hype. 1,000%.
Starting off with part one of the book, we get the background story. If you're not familiar with Jeanette McCurdy, she starred on Nickelodeon for quite a few years. She apparently did quite a few odd jobs, which I think was kind of a lot of more mature context that she was probably starring in than what we were at that age. But I watched iCarly growing up. I've watched the rerun of iCarly. So very familiar with her acting as far as that goes. But she lives in Garden Grove with her parents, maternal grandparents, and her three older brothers. She has an extremely close relationship with her mother, who is diagnosed with cancer years before, but it's in remission. At age six, she began her acting career because of her mother, whose dream was to become an actress. And Jeanette was extremely disinterested in acting, but feels that her purpose in her life is to keep her mom happy and calm. So she acts in several different roles in commercials, television, things like that. And after struggling with anxiety over auditions, she develops a voice in her head, which she believes is the Holy Spirit. And this voice instructs her to perform certain rituals that helps Jeanette calm down. So when her grandfather suggests that she may have OCD, her mother is dismissive. And after noticing that her body is changing, she also fears that she is growing up and will no longer be able to be cast in children's roles, which will disappoint her mother. So she asks her mother how she can stop her body from changing. And so she starts talking about helping her with calorie restrictions. So she has three brothers, like I said, Marcus, Dustin, and Scott, and they're all at her mother's bedside and starting off the book. Their mother knew, they think, will make her wake up, which to me honestly kind of showed me how a little bit immature and closeted their lives were, because I really feel like all of them in some sort of sense, because they even talk about, her brother and stuff later on in the book being showered by their mother as well. I think that they all were sheltered so much that it was an immature thought. They're like, oh, my mom will wake up from this coma if I just come up with a great thing to make her wake up, she's the youngest one, isn't she, of all the siblings?
Yeah, I think so.
And she was pretty mature at this point.
To me, I think having that scene and getting to see what her brother said too, as opposed to just her, mm-hmm. also helped them a little bit more in perspective as well, because we don't go into grave detail about the boys. There's a couple things here and there, so we can see their trauma is probably different than hers, obviously being a woman is different. Yeah. Anyways, maybe they didn't see it as the same traumatic level or whatever, Yeah. There's different things there that we don't get to explore, but I did like just a little bit to show us where they were, how they were doing, because it's so interesting to me. The two children can live in the same household and be raised the exact same way and experience it totally differently.
Yeah.
I liked being able to see a little bit of the brothers. I honestly would even like it maybe a little bit more. Maybe like a chapter of what they thought their experience was like. Just out of curiosity.
If it was Jeanette's experience, I don't know if a chapter would be able to cover everything.
I don't think it would be Jeanette's experience. I more or less would like something from their perspective that says, I noticed these things. Or I didn't notice them until I was older that it was inappropriate. Or I still don't realize it. Whatever it is. Yeah. For example, how the mom and dad operated and spoke to each other and acted. Did they realize that was inappropriate? Because Jeanette didn't for a long time.
Yeah.
Did the boys realize it was happening? I just find it fascinating.
Yeah. Well, I found it extremely sad that she thought her exciting news was not I had a normal day today or something like that. It was I'm 89 pounds.
When she said that in the beginning of the book, I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
It's going to be really bad.
And she says basically she reflects on who she is now is not who she wants to live like anymore, just to please her mom. But a quote she does say is, I can't make sense of it. If the weight isn't enough to get my mom to wake up, then nothing will be. And if nothing can wake her up, then that means she's really going to die. And if she's really going to die, what am I supposed to do with myself? My life's purpose has always been to make mom happy, to be who she wanted me to be. So without mom, who am I supposed to be now?
I got to say, when I first heard about this book and going into it, I thought it was going to be written from I thought while mom was still alive, she was going to have that realization, I want her to die. I want the cancer to take her.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to years later, does she realize that it was in her best benefit for her mom to pass away?
Yeah.
So that was really interesting to see the opposite side of it.
I think, to be honest, the way she went about it, I think her mom sheltered her still even in adulthood and stuff so much that it was impossible for her to ever come to that realization, I think, as long as her mom was alive.
And yeah, that's fair.
I don't think she would have ever had that opportunity. Now, if maybe she went to live with Miranda for a little bit, maybe that could have changed something. But I also don't think that Miranda at the age she was at would have been able to healthily handle everything Jeanette had to unpack as well. So
yeah,
I don't know if that would have ended up well for Miranda at the same time.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I just didn't know, because it does happen that at some point you realize what's happening to you and what you want is for that person to go away. We start out with her wish at her 6-year-old birthday party about how to keep mom alive.
Yeah.
I kind of thought we would end up at some point at a birthday party where it'd be the opposite. But it was really fascinating. Honestly, if her mom wasn't alive, she could catch these hands. But she's dead. So, anyways.
When you mentioned the birthday party, I did hate that, like, her mom, literally everywhere she went, she used her cancer diagnosis as a way to draw attention or get what she wanted. And just a simple 6-year-old birthday party, Jeanette was not even focused on the fact that it was her birthday party. It was, oh, where's mom at? What's mom doing? I've got to make sure she's happy. I mean, just terrible.
Yeah.
At six years old.
You could have a perfectly normal and mentally stable mother who has cancer and your child still be concerned and consumed with taking care of mom. But then it goes a step further, and like, even when she's in remission and she's doing well for years, you know, she doesn't have cancer anymore for years, like, it's still constant cancer this, cancer that, cancer yeah. this, cancer that. And like, I'm sure once your mom gets better, you probably want to forget and like pretend like she never really had cancer. But you couldn't do that in this scenario because mom brought it up every 5 seconds.
Well, I think her mom really did it as an attention seeking kind of thing.
Absolutely.
I don't think it was about the cancer whatsoever.
Whatever she could use.
And to be honest, I kind of even at some point started to wonder if the cancer diagnosis was actually even real in the first place. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just the way she was, it would not have surprised me if she played off that she was sick just to get some attention.
I had that thought too. I wondered if it was fake until it came back and it was killing her. And she said that she could tell. But I did too for a while. I thought, I wonder if she even had cancer. Or did she have a cancer scare and made it into like she had cancer? You know, I will say though, mom's mom, grandma, no wonder mom turned out the way she did. Jeanette hits it a little bit about grandma, but I kind of wish she would have dived into that. Like, acknowledging that her mom was a product of her grandma also.
Yeah.
Which is a hard thing to do because, you know, that person is the one that traumatized you directly. And I'm not saying it excuses a single thing her mother did. It does not. I wholeheartedly believe you can acknowledge your trauma and get better and not traumatize your children. But it also would have been interesting to sort of explore that of, like, the cycle that Jeanette is breaking.
Yeah, absolutely.
As opposed to just her mom being a horrible person.
So, we do get a couple instances where her mom goes off on rants. Her mom does vent about how she's destined for this better life. And she needs to have a financially stable man, career as an actress, all this kind of stuff. And she's talking about how like her parents are to blame for this. We find out later that you literally cheated on your husband 4 times.
At least. With a musician.
Yeah. And so you have a financially stable man because you have a man that's going to work every single day. And then you were with a musician, which is not financially stable. I'm kind of confused. And I wish it would have gone into more with what her life was like a little bit. But I know that the way that Jeanette would have heard it from her mother would have not been truthful. And I don't think if she got it from her grandmother, it would have been truthful either. Yes. But it would have been interesting to maybe hear it from her dad's point of view, her biological dad. Because I do feel like based off the one little interaction, he kind of seemed normal.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, and I thought like, okay, so the oldest son is husband, who she thought is her dad.
Mm-hmm.
Her and her other two brothers are the affair man, bio dad. So mom had 3 kids by this other man.
Yeah.
And husband, dad, knew it. And she still screamed and yelled at him and all that stuff.
And he still took it.
I wanted to know more about why he stayed.
Yeah.
Also, especially because he ends up with mom's best friend who stole the baby name. Then I started wondering, was it his baby? Low key, and we just don't know that part. There was too much drama, and I needed more explanation of the drama. Partially because I'm nosy, but also partially for it to make sense. Because I guess I was a little confused as to when she even could have cheated, to be quite frank. But I guess that was before Jeanette, really.
Yeah.
So I then wanted to know when it stopped exactly. What is the likelihood that you hook up 3 times and you end up pregnant every single time? You know what I mean? Yeah. So, like, it had to have a full affair. And he knew about the kids, but he didn't try to make contact or get to know them or anything. That's weird. There were definitely lacking details, and I wanted more information. I will say, though, bottom line, if I worked 2 jobs, came home to that woman yelling at me and calling me names and hitting me and throwing things at me and making me sleep in my car, the minimal thing that I'm going to do is probably have an affair. I think you should just leave anyways. Well, but so I'm wondering if he was cheating also. I wonder if they both were stepping out.
I sense it for sure at the end of her life that had to be the case if they got together that quickly. But my question is how that many adults lived under the same roof and they couldn't afford bills.
I agree. I couldn't figure out how they were that poor. If dad was working two jobs, grandpa worked.
I know Disneyland or Disney World or whatever doesn't pay their people that great. But at the same time, dad's working two jobs. Mom could have sold things on the side with grandma. And grandpa also worked. It didn't seem like that big of a house. But I don't know if it was because visually I was thinking like mounds of hoarding. So it just made the house seem smaller. But at the same time, she talked about how poor she basically was. It still didn't make sense how in the world they all couldn't afford rent. Even if it was a four bedroom.
Here's the crazy thing. Not even couldn't afford rent because she admitted they really didn't pay rent because it was dad's parents that owned the house.
Yeah.
So what were you paying? I don't know. I also struggled like, and maybe I'm not minimizing. Maybe she was really as poor as she made it sound. I don't know. But maybe it seemed so poor to her because she grew up in, like, California around people who probably have a ton of money and had everything they ever wanted.
She emphasized how her mom was all the time, like, deterring bill collectors but then going to the mall and splurging on stuff. So
that's true. So I don't think – maybe they weren't actually poor. Maybe they had poor
money
financial
management.
Yeah. Maybe that's what it was. But I kept saying, how do you not afford your rent or some groceries? Also, if you have that many kids, that many people in the house, I guarantee somebody qualifies for government assistance.
Yeah.
For groceries, at least.
Well, I do think it's probably money management because if it's hoarding, more than likely she's probably splurging her money on her hoards instead of...
As soon as she described the house, I had to put it out of my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not diagnosed OCD, but my OCD, I was like, I can't even picture what the house looks like because I won't be able to read this book. Uh-uh. Like, I have to turn it off. Uh-uh. So anytime she brought up the house, I just like, not listening.
Blackout.
Nope. Mm-mm.
So they start going to auditions, Jeanette and her mom. And her mom, it really disgusts me. She was like, I'm making sacrifices for you for driving you to these auditions. And I was just like, shut up.
I want to know what she was
sacrificing. You were the one that wanted her to do this. So don't sit there and complain about it the entire time you're having to do everything to get her there.
Correct. And let me add this before we move on, because this really isn't important to the storyline, but... And I... Don't be offended by this if you were homeschooled. But the majority of my life, I've heard, like, if you're homeschooled, you're probably weird. Okay, you're probably in a cult, or you have some religion that, like, you don't socialize with people, you know, whatever it is. So you're very much not socialized. So you don't act the same way that, you know, typical for your peers and around your age that are socialized.
Well, I mean, you don't have as much exposure to people.
All I could think about was them being homeschooled, too. No wonder they were weird and traumatized. They spent every waking minute with this woman.
Mm-hmm.
If they had gone to school, they might have had at least a little bit of a better chance.
I mean, heck, the fact that church was her getaway was sad to me as well.
Yeah.
For 3 hours, that's all she looked forward to.
Yeah.
And half of the time, she couldn't even go.
I just wanted to hug Jeanette this entire book. I just wanted to hug her and be like, I'm so sorry. And if she was alive, I'd whoop her ass for you still. She deserved to have an ass whooping, but she's dead now, so I can't do that. I hope she blocks grandma and never talks to grandma again. Mm-hmm. Because grandma is part of the problem.
Yeah.
Grandpa sounded lovely, but if you can't have contact with grandpa and not grandma, then you have to cut both of them off.
Mm-hmm.
It's so strange to me that neither grandpa or dad did anything to set this woman in her place or to set her straight. You know something's got to be wrong. To know your kids are actively being traumatized and berated and witnessing all of this and to do nothing about it really makes me mad.
Yeah, I agree.
Mom or dad's perspective.
Grandpa especially, because, I mean, dad, after we found out he was not biological dad, kind of his behaviors made sense that she was describing, like he was kind of disattached and stuff.
Yes.
Kind of made sense. But grandpa, She talked about how loving and caring he was towards her, and it just confused me a lot.
I agree.
However, speaking from experience, I have had the same set of grandparents growing up and kind of similar situations on father's side. So, like, my grandfather didn't speak up and always defended my grandmother, even though half the time it was all of our faults and not hers, even though most of it worked the same way. So, I mean, kind of can understand where that's kind of the case.
At that point, I think you just have to cut them both off then.
I did, yeah.
Even if Grandpa has good intentions but is misguided or whatever, you still, unfortunately, if he's not going to stand up to Grandma, especially when it's... So, I feel like if she just has, like, there's a difference in personality.
Mm-hmm.
Or if there's, like, this one thing in particular that she does, but, like, it's not harmful, it's not, you know, intentionally being hateful. This woman in this book is intentionally being hateful.
Yeah.
She's intentionally gaslighting and manipulating her, like, the entire time. And that is not okay.
No.
For anybody to do that to anybody. Much less a grandma to a grandchild. So, it really bothered me that Grandpa seemed so loving and didn't do anything.
Yeah.
I wanted Grandpa to leave Grandma and go live with Jeanette. Some healing probably would have happened if they'd done that.
It also bothered me the fact that the mom was like, oh, I'm going to only take money for your essentials. And I was like, okay, well. And then that's what got me thinking that maybe she was not spending her money smartly, because I was just like, okay, well, what do you classify as your essentials? Because if you're a hoarder, everything's essential because you can't throw anything out. The fact that she talked about, like, she had baggies with broken coffee mugs or little animal carcasses in your house, yeah, that you can't throw out. I was honestly curious how, when they did go out in public, how people did not smell them. If you are living around animal carcasses, how are you A, not being sick all the time, and B, people are not smelling that on you?
They did probably smell them.
Why did they not get reported to CPS at some point?
So, you have to keep in mind, this was 20-something years ago.
Yeah, true.
So, nowadays, I bet it would get reported. True. I also think nowadays, we keep a better check on people who are homeschooled. We have a system. For them to be homeschooled, there has to be some sort of record. Yeah. It's not like they just on a whim get to decide and nobody knows about it. There has to be some level they're following to meet requirements.
Yeah.
They don't always do that, obviously, but there's some sort of system now. Back in this day, there probably wasn't a system at all. But I don't know. CPS should have been called. And I'm hard-pressed to say that. These kids, though, I'm telling you, this is... I just, like, the whole time was like, my mouth just opened the whole time. Jaw dropped. Every time something would happen. When we first started, she said it in a way that you could experience it how baby or child Jeanette experienced it, how, like, it wasn't shocking, it wasn't new, it wasn't wrong to her, that's just how it was, and that's what we did, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It wasn't, so you got to experience the ride with her of the up and downs, and oh my gosh, it was just really good in a really morbid way, because it's
yeah,
awful.
And she was talking about the essentials, but I found it really sad that she didn't even want to tell her mom that there was, like, a principal actor role, that it was just, like, background roles, because she was afraid of, like, how her mom was going to react. And, like, basically the agent at the at that one was just like, you know, hey, does she even want to act? And she's like, absolutely. She wants this more than anything. And I was like, you as the agent should have looked at that child and been like, do you really, honey? Like, please tell me the truth. Like, mom, shut up. Let me talk to the child who I'm actually asking about. So,
I don't care. They're just lying in their pockets.
Yeah, true. So, she ended up getting a role on X-Files. And so, they are on their way there. And the mom's, like, super excited. And she's, like, carefree. And Jeanette's just, she makes a comment, I wish she was like this more often. She literally caters her entire day-to-day around making mom happy. The perfect example is when they're trying to get their life together to go to church. Jeanette's literally cleaning what her brothers had spilled in the floor to avoid her mom stepping into it. And her mom ends up stepping into it. She already knows the order of operations of what's going to happen with her mom's reaction. And it's just like a domino effect that's just so, I don't know. I don't even know how to describe the misery in it. I just, yep. I hate that. And then her mom just goes off rockers with, I mean, and honestly, I wonder, does she have multiple personality disorders? I'm honestly curious.
I think she's probably bipolar.
Bipolar, for sure. Had but more than one thing.
Her mania was going back and forth. Oh, yeah, she probably did. But I definitely think she was probably bipolar. Just the switching back and forth. Yeah. But you're right. I'm sure she had multiple. Which, okay. And I'm not playing devil's advocate. But it would have been, if she was still alive, it would have been interesting to have a chapter in her perspective to understand her brain better.
Yeah.
Being a hoarder or someone who hoards, that is a mental illness. It is classified as a mental illness all in itself. Much less if you add on bipolar or anything else you want to add in there. So the pure chaos in her brain would have been chaotic on page, but also it would have been so enlightening to sort of step back and see. I don't know. Like I said, it would have been cool to have something showing from grandma to mom to see, is it genetic? Was there something that happened to her that traumatized her that caused it? It just would have been really interesting. And grandma, obviously, I think grandma was very mentally ill as well and probably needed to be not diagnosed and medicated, but I think that about a lot of people. So
we see the different kinds of behavior, but at one point her dad's late coming home from work and her mom attacks him with a knife and tells him to get out of the house. Jeanette literally talks about how she's cheering her mother on for trying to stab her father. I'm just like, how is this even anywhere near acceptable? I don't understand how more neighbors did not call the police. I know she talked about one neighbor calling that one time, but how are so many people in the neighborhood not hearing this?
I was surprised that none of the other moms at the auditions ever called the CPS to check on them.
Did the moms at the audition ever see the violence?
No, not necessarily the violence, but I just mean like the one mom who said, I'm concerned about your daughter and that she has anorexia.
Oh, at the dance.
And Jeanette's mom was like, mind your business.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that mom never made a call or never asked questions. The doctor. Motherly thing to be concerned. The doctors. Yeah, the doctor, when the doctor said, I have concerns and that child didn't come back, that doctor should have followed up.
Yeah.
And they're mandated reporters.
Yeah.
So, like, it's obviously easier said than done because you get busy, you have a million clients a day or whatever. But there's checks and balances that should have been followed through.
I think the saddest part about this book is just there's so many people that failed her.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not just talking about 10 people. There's like 50 people that failed her. So
I will say, of all the negative, it was nice to hear that Miranda was somebody she actually had a real relationship with, could trust and opened up to and was supportive. Every time we do these documentaries or these like behind the scenes of your favorite TV show, it's never good.
Yeah.
Everybody hated each other. The set is extremely toxic. There's perverts, whatever. I mean, just all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
So I was like, please, please don't tell me that you two actually hate each other. Because I loved iCarly. Loved it. I didn't watch the rerun and I didn't watch Sam and Cat. I was too old by the time that came out. But I loved iCarly. And I watched from the first to the last episode. They even had One Direction on there and I just thought it was the coolest thing ever. Like, any day of the week. And I loved Sam specifically. Like, it just was so close to my heart from my childhood. So I was like, please don't ruin it. Not that your experience wouldn't be valid and your experience is important to learn about, but also I was like, please don't ruin it for me.
That's understandable.
But yeah, that was refreshing at least that there was one person she knew she could.
Well, and I hated that her mom also was like wiping her on the toilet still like 8 years old. And
she said her mom did vaginal and breast checks.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't have any words.
That, not only that, but also did it while her brother was also in the bathtub naked as well.
Her older brother.
Yeah.
And also caused her period and puberty to be regressed.
Yeah.
So that she could stay younger.
Yeah.
And smaller. I'm telling you, if she was alive, she could run these hands. Physical violence is not the answer, but sometimes people deserve to get their ass whooped, and she is one of them.
I would not object to that whatsoever.
She wouldn't understand anything else. You couldn't have a reasonable, logical conversation with her. So just let me beat her up. Make Jeanette feel better, hopefully.
Well, and
it wouldn't probably do anything.
The the agency as well that she tried to get one of the brothers on and then her on, when they showed up, they were like willing to sign him, and like she just like begged them, like, oh, I'm a recovering cancer patient, please sign on my
they well. Win with it.
Yeah.
And then when she kept switching agents, did the last agent say, I'm concerned about Jeanette and that's why mom switched her?
Mm-hmm, true.
And if so, then why didn't they report? I don't know.
Well, the only way they signed her on was her attending acting classes, and she hated them. But it wasn't just because, like, her going there. I actually think she generally would have liked it if she would have been able to participate as a child actor and not yeah. as her mom in the audience telling her what she did and didn't do right, and all the sideline coaching she had done was just terrible.
I totally agree. The scene where dad takes her and they ride the bikes and then she misses the class afterwards, that broke my heart.
Yeah.
I was happy for her to get to have that time with dad and have those memories with dad also, but the fact that she was in full panic mode going home because they missed the class, that's not the scene where she chases dad with the knife, is it?
No, that's prior.
Okay. So she does something when he gets home that night. I don't remember what it is, but something else violent and ridiculous, but broke my heart for her.
Yeah.
To know, like, to have that realization. And I know what it feels like, that terrifying moment of realization that you're about to have to go face this. And it's not going to be pretty.
And there's a quote from that scene that I want to read. She says, it's, being around mom can be tiring, sure, but at least I know what to do to make her happy. Around dad, I never really know. It's less work, but it's also less rewarding. So not only does she have a parent that she's basically trying to cater to her emotions, but then she also has a parent that is stepped back from connecting with her, and she doesn't quite understand why.
Yeah, that was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
That experience, though, of better the devil you know than the one you don't, is so common, but such a, especially for a child, such a heartbreaking thing to have a realization that, like, she'd rather the devil she know than the devil she doesn't. Like, and she shouldn't have to know any of the devils, yeah. experience any of that. She should have been protected. Oh, it makes me so mad.
Well, and kind of going into kind of the mental disorder of things as far as on Jeanette's side, whenever she starts hearing the Holy Ghost, or what she thinks is the Holy Ghost, that kind of broke me up as well, because she is thinking, oh my gosh, I've got this great thing that my entire life has been speaking to me, and she doesn't feel comfortable telling anybody about it. Then she starts doing these repetitive motions. Whenever I was younger, I had to do things repetitively. Things had to be color-coded. I had to go through therapy and work myself out of that. Like, I still struggle with it to this day. Like, things have to be straight lines. I can tell you every picture in my house that is literally not straight, which one of them is right in front of me. There's multiple things I've had to work through over the years, but she never had the chance to try. Mm-hmm. Growing up, in my experience, it was much easier to get out of those behaviors when I caught it early, because, like, I don't think I would have been able to do it now. Like, literally this picture not being straight, I would have had to adjust it like 20 times. Part of my therapy that I've done years on years is I have one crooked thing in each room, so that way it's my way of, like, disheveling almost, like, or unraveling my OCD. It drives me absolutely insane. And I've had to work years upon years upon years of, like, doing that. But I think that she would have caught it early on. And at least whenever the grandpa mentioned something about it, it probably would have been easier for her to get out of some of those behaviors. I think things like bulimia could be an attribute of her OCD, because mm-hmm. she felt the need and, like, compulsion to do certain things. It evolved into making that worse and harder for her in the long run.
Her eating disorders and her alcoholism
mm-hmm.
can be attributed.
Well, she had a routine to her entire thing. Like, yeah. especially whenever, like, the deep OCD, you have to have, like, any kind of change to their routine just unravels your entire yep. plan or anything. So, I mean, it's almost like, think about it, whenever you have, like, a rainbow and you have, like, a red mixed in with the yellows, it's going to drive you insane because it's red mixed in with yellows. But, like, mm-hmm. it's the same with her. She had to have the same kind of routine. Whenever she got off work, she went home, she drank a bunch, she'd throw up, she binge-eat, you know.
Her every day, the doctor pointed out, you starve yourself for breakfast, you starve yourself for lunch, then don't eat until 11 o'clock at night. Of course, you're starving at that point, so you eat a lot of food. And then because you eat a lot of food, your guilt comes back, so you throw it up. And then you repeat the cycle the next day. Like, it was down to a schedule.
Yeah.
When big things happened, like mom's cancer came back, she spiraled more. And then when mom died, she spiraled more. When she found out about Steven, all these things made the spiral worse and worse and worse because it was added on top of that, and she was so out of control. It broke my heart to imagine her, especially as a child or young adult, even if she was 80 years old, but especially that young, having to suffer through that all alone, not knowing what it is, not having an explanation, and not being able to realize what is happening to you, then having to unlearn it 25 years later. This whole book is so sad.
I did want to pinpoint on whenever she did the audition or was practicing for the audition when she threw the temper tantrum. And her mom was like, how in the world did you learn how to do that? And she's like, I don't know. Just came to me. And I'm like, the fact that you could even tell your mother, oh yeah, I got it from you.
I've watched you, Mom. Just imitating what I do best.
And the fact that she got applauded for it kind of hurt me even more. She's seen this behavior, not liked this behavior, and now she's learning it. I'm wondering how many people did something similar for her mom, and that's what influenced her to be who she was. The fact that she also made her audition with 103 degree fever and was just like, just chug this Gatorade, you'll be fine. Oh, her crying on cue. That's another thing too. That honestly probably ticked me off the most out of any of it. Is the fact that her mom was like, hey, imagine these highly tragic incidents happening to all of your family members. That's torturous as a child. She's still a child at this point.
Oh, wholeheartedly agree. Did it make you more sad though that she learned how to cry on cue because of one of those things? Or did it make you more sad when she stopped being able to cry on cue and her mom almost punished her for it? Which one made you more mad?
Honestly, probably the crying on cue. Her mom was vividly describing to her how all of her family members would be mangled and like murdered and like things like that. Like, to me, like that's a terrible thing to be teaching your child. No wonder she was so terrified for her mom to die, because that's literally all she's been forced to imagine for most of her life.
Yeah.
Terrible. Terrible parenting.
I agree.
Then when she tells her mom that she doesn't want to act anymore, and her mom was upset by it, and then she's like, never mind, I'm just kidding. She's like, okay. Rainbows and butterflies.
Dries her tears.
So at one point, Jeanette does like really decide that she's not going to do acting anymore. She's like, oh, I'm gonna do screenplays. And like, she is so excited to bring her mom this screenplay. I can understand her thought process. It's something similar in the same field, so like, that's something me and mom both can enjoy together. Like, I get where she was coming from. And then for her mom to be like, this is terrible, like, writers get fat, you don't need to be doing this,
to be so dismissive, oh, it enraged me.
I felt so terrible for her. And I was distraught that she could have possibly had a better childhood after that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, internally had a better childhood. Not particularly, like, her outside situation wouldn't have changed too much. But, like, internally, she would have possibly got to a point where she was maybe feeling better about herself, excited about what she was doing every day. There was so much more that could have been happening.
No, I agree. And I think, like, her being dismissive of what Jeanette wants in general, or what Jeanette enjoys, and sort of pushing her activities and what she wants on Jeanette, very much was, like, the core problem, I think, for Jeanette. Like, I think everything else spiraled around it, don't get me wrong, but like, Jeanette not knowing what to do for Jeanette. Jeanette did everything for everybody else her entire life and never once asked, what do I want to do? What do I want to be? Now she's in her mid-20s before she ever had that realization of, maybe I should do something for me now.
Yeah.
You know? And I think if she had had that earlier, she would have had a better life. I think she would have rebelled a little bit more against her mom and worked against some of those. Maybe not everything, because there's obviously a certain level of mental illness you can't handle yourself. But something, or maybe it would have pushed her to therapy sooner. She was such a, I don't want to say a people pleaser, really, but she really was. And that's used in such a derogatory way. I don't think it's a bad thing that you want to make other people happy, so long as it's not abused. But the reality is it gets abused. It was such a people-pleasing behavior. My mom is that, and so I'm the opposite, except for my mom. The entire time I was like, girl, just tell her you don't want to do it. Tell them you don't want to do that. But you don't even like this. Like, speak up. But, like, I know logically it's not that easy. So, like, I'm not judging her for not doing that.
Yeah.
Totally understand it's not that easy. But I just kept getting frustrated and was like, ugh. She doesn't want that. I wanted to be able to tell her mom, she doesn't like that, girl. Back up. You know?
Yeah.
Ugh, it was just sad. This whole book is just sad. You know what, though? I will say, I didn't cry as much as I thought I was going to.
I didn't either. I was more angry.
Yeah, I was more
angry. I was angry, frustrated. I was just like, I just wanted to give Jeanette a hug. I was just like, man, I hate that for you.
Yep.
The other part is whenever she thinks that she's got breast cancer and turns out it's her boobs. And then her mom's like, oh, well, let me teach you about counting your calories. You'll stay young forever. You'll be fine. I'm like, what in this delusional state of mind? And then I'm just wondering, did your mom teach you this? Did you learn it on your own? I was kind of curious.
Yep. Like, was mom actually so delusional that, like, she did believe it was calorie restriction and not realize that it was eating disorder and not realize how harmful it was? Or did she do that to herself because, or society, because we know mom had this idea of, like, what a superstar should be, and she wanted to be a superstar. So we know that comes along with it as well. But it's interesting to try to trace it back to figure out where it came from, where it started, and how it spiraled. But we aren't going to get that because she is dead and delusional anyways.
I mean, the saddest part, I know we talked about the shower thing earlier, but I do want to read a quote from there because it brought a little bit more of a reality into basically she was being sexually abused by her mother. By the time the exams are done, a huge wave of relief washes over my whole body. And I realize that's the first time I felt my body since the exam started. It's weird. When the exams are really happening, I feel like I'm outside myself. And that's exactly how I have read in other instances where people are talking about sexual abuse of some kind. They're talking about how they didn't feel their body the entire time, like they were outside themselves, like relief.
They disassociated.
Yeah. Terrible. Yeah.
No, when she said that, that's probably one of the times that I did cry. I just thought, how awful for her. It's awful that it happened in the first place, right? I don't know if it's worse or better that she didn't realize that it was sexual assault at the time.
Yeah.
There's a ton of studies about whether or not you know it's right or wrong at the time and how that impacts your view of yourself and what shame comes along with it or what doesn't. But I don't know which way it was. Honestly, even by the end of the book, she doesn't actually acknowledge that it was sexual assault. Mm-hmm. She acknowledges that it was inappropriate and that it made her uncomfortable when her mom should have done it, but she doesn't actually call it sexual assault. And that's what it was. It was child sexual abuse. For her and her brother, to be quite frank. Did that happen to mom? Like, I want to know. I want to know. But it was really sad. Yeah. That was a bad scene. It was all bad. We're telling you to read it because it's such a good book. And it deals with topics that most of us have probably had some experience with. Especially for women in particular. But it is so heartbreaking and it can be triggering. If you can't handle it, don't read it. Because it probably will trigger you in some way. Even if it's just your anger. It set my anger off, I can tell you that.
Agreed. Jeanette lands the leading role in Nicola Dean's show. And she is opposite of Miranda Crossgrove, who plays Carly Shay. She and her co-star develop a strong friendship despite their different backgrounds. And the show's creator is known for being emotionally manipulative and abusive, but the iCarly show does find success, and Jeanette decides to pursue a country music career because of her mother. Her mother's cancer ends up returning as she's trying to promote her album, and she ends up going on tour for the first time alone, which is like the first time she's ever been away from her mom. She just starts binge eating during that time. She also experiences her first real kiss and things like that. And her mom ends up insulting her weight when she gets back, and she starts vowing that she'll get on this diet. She does end up moving into her own apartment. However, her mom does not leave her. And then she starts dating a much older coworker, which she keeps a secret from her mother. And ends up finding out her mom that Jeanette was lying, and starts violently calling her different names. And she basically just returns home, and her mom pretends nothing ever happened.
Let me just say this. I did not know she had a country music career. That was news to me.
That was also news to me. I don't think I have ever heard that.
Second of all, none of the romantic relationships in this book were good, which obviously is probably intentional, you know, talking about more of her trauma. But the much older man, this first go-round, I'd like to know his name. Actually, I tried to look it up. I ain't gonna lie to you. I tried to figure out who it was.
It's the guy she went on that trip with, wasn't it?
Because he could catch these hands, too, to this day. She was 18. And men love to say, oh, she's 18, she's legal. She's a child. Especially her mentality. She was still a child. And that was disgusting. Yeah. Her next journey from iCarly to the next series or whatever with Sam. Or Sam and Kat with Ariana Grande.
Mm-hmm.
I found it interesting that she was so open and honest about her jealousy, not per se of Ariana, but of Ariana's life experiences, what was happening for her. That was refreshing. I will say, I was a little concerned at one point because she spoke about Ariana's childhood, and no matter what it might have looked like from the outside, Jeanette doesn't actually know that. So that bothered me a little bit. It can be picture perfect on the outside and be just as horrible as hers was. So I didn't like that. But I did find it refreshing that she could be honest that she was jealous of her and that she acted that way and resented her without just bad-mouthing Ariana, if that makes sense. I liked that.
She mentions her relationship with Miranda and stuff, and like how her mom's still like showering her and keeping her on the diet. She says, fame has put a wedge between mom and me that I didn't think was possible. She wanted this and I wanted her to have it. I wanted her to be happy. Now that I have it, I realize that she's happy and I'm not. Her happiness came at a cost of mine. I feel robbed and exploited. Sometimes I look at her and I just hate her. And then I hate myself for feeling that. I tell myself I'm ungrateful. I'm worthless without her. And I'm like, no, honey. You would be so much more. I personally think her mother limited her growth in the industry.
Oh, I agree.
Not only because of the trauma she caused, but I think the mom Jeanette referred to multiple times, she didn't want to be known as that kid that caused this problem. But I think that her mom kind of became the mom that caused the problems in a sense. So,
oh, I wholeheartedly agree. Speaking of her mom causing the problems with her career, the scene where they're at dinner and the man rubs Jeanette's shoulders and plies her with alcohol and her mom goes along with it, I almost couldn't read the scene. I was so mad.
Whenever she talks about how she started her music career, because her mom like wanted her to while the writer's strike was going on back in 2007. And she...
That's crazy. We're old.
I know.
We've lived through two strikes.
I felt really bad for her. It was her first time on her own. And it was really hard for her to experience that. Mom guilt tripping her to move with her to that apartment. It kind of took me off.
And kind of.
It kind of took me off more so for the dad, because I feel like the dad didn't say anything, because he's like, oh, I get her out of my hair.
Mm-hmm.
So you just go and you go have that.
Yeah, no. I would have made it up that the landlord said, only one person could live here or something.
Yeah, something.
I'd have called the police, said she was an intruder. Get her out of my apartment.
That's one way, I guess.
I probably would have killed her in her sleep at some point. I'm not going to lie to you. She makes me mad.
She was a lot. But I also felt bad for her whenever she said that she had gone to Six Flags with her iCarly cast members and Joe had touched her inappropriately, and then she continued seeing him after that. Not only that, but he was with somebody else at the start of their relationship, and then mm-hmm. he basically spends his evening, their first date almost, crying, sitting
crying there, over this other girl.
Yeah, and then it's
saying,
like, "Oh, you won't."
He
have
made
sex.
A mistake.
Yeah, because she wouldn't have sex with him. And then she ends up giving him oral sex, and he still isn't satisfied. Because she doesn't understand what's happening because nobody's ever taught her what's happening. Disgusting.
Sexual assault again.
Yeah.
If it's not an enthusiastic yes, it's a no. Learn to respect that. No is a complete sentence. It's not that hard.
That is true.
Listen, and you can do whatever you want with your body. I do not care. We are in a day and age where sex is pretty common. It's not like back in the day where everybody was hiding it and everybody was claiming they didn't do it. It's pretty common.
Yeah.
So you can probably find a willing partner instead of abusing and manipulating someone else into doing it.
Especially a child.
Yes. She was 18, but yes. I think I have a problem with fetishizing 18, 19, even maybe 20-year-olds.
To be honest,
you're
though,
still, there's like teenager mentality.
Yeah, mental wise, I do not think she was at an 18-year-old's stand.
No, she definitely wasn't. No, I agree.
I think she wanted to be there and took steps to get there, but her mom kept interjecting to prevent that from happening.
I agree.
But she ends up going on a Hawaiian vacation with this guy. Her mom ends up calling her when she finds out about it. 37 missed calls. Several emails, and all of them are berating her. She talks about going on her fan pages and like talking about how crazy she is, and like she's accusing her of like her cancer coming back. At the end of the email, it's like, please send money for fridge.
Literally.
I remember listening to that on my car ride home. She reads that email off, and then she says it at the bottom. I was like, what the crap? Yeah. All the stuff she says, and then she's just like, please send money for fridge. Thank you.
No, because she's literally insane. Pure insanity.
And then afterwards, they end up meeting up, and she doesn't even act like anything happened. That was the crazy part, too. She just did not act like anything happened. And then she purposely humiliated her, because then she asked her to sing this song at my funeral, and asked her to sing it in the middle of Wendy's. Or Burger King.
No. I'd have drove us off the road. I'm telling you, there were so many points that I thought, like, girl, speak up.
Yeah.
And I, like I said, I'm not judging her because I know it's easier said than done. But I just kept thinking, like, tell her to get lost.
Yep.
What? She doesn't benefit you in any way.
No.
In fact, when you're having a good time, she normally sends you a message to ruin it.
Yep.
It's like pure insanity.
She does that to get attention back onto her.
I'm glad her mom died too.
Are you constantly feeling guilty about spending so much money on buying your favorite books, Carl and M's recommendations, or book trophies? Worry no more with Book Outlet. Books are up to 75% off. Inventory changes daily, but the prices are consistent. Check our link in the description and you'll have access to a coupon for $5 off your next purchase. So, Jeanette's mother continues to grow weaker, and Jeanette starts binge eating and drinking, and whenever her mom finally dies, she is completely numb with alcohol. She ends up developing bulimia, and then she ends up falling in love with an assistant director named Steven, and after discovering about her eating disorder, he does deliver an ultimatum that forces her to meet with a therapist. After the therapist expresses concern, however, Jeanette fires her. So, Steven then at some point becomes a born-again Christian and expresses his desire to be celibate. Jeanette starts falling more and more dissatisfied with her career. She meets up with her father, who confesses that he's not her biological father. She tries to talk to Stephen. Then she ends up finding out that he believes that he is Jesus Christ. She realizes that her life is falling apart and seeks treatment for her eating disorder. Stephen, at the same time, begins medication and seems to be doing better, but he refuses to address his chronic drug use. After Jeanette starts succeeding in recovery, she finds herself growing further apart from him, and ultimately she breaks things off and continues to improve and develop healthier habits. She meets her biological father and decides to step away from acting.
I read on the internet that after she met her dad, they talked for 3 or 4 months, but it fizzled out.
That doesn't surprise me by the fact that he knew her mom died and then didn't try to be near her.
Or before mom died.
True.
What did she have over your head that would keep you from trying to know your children?
Not one, but three.
Yeah. No, I didn't think he needed to be a dad, but whatever. I gotta say this now, and I do not in any way think that schizophrenia is a joke or should be made fun of or anything. If that man looked at me in my face, though, and told me he thought he was the Antichrist or the recoming of Jesus Christ or whatever it is he said, I would have laughed in his face.
That was my first reaction, to be honest. When she said it out loud, I laughed aloud because I was just like, what?
I would have laughed. I know he said don't laugh, but you gotta laugh. You say don't laugh, that makes me want
to
laugh too.
To be honest, it would be like a baffling laugh.
Is he joking?
That's so funny. Good try.
And then when he says, I'm serious.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, well, we're going to get you tested.
Yeah.
I'm serious. Because what are you talking about?
And then the fact she just left him.
Just left him there.
Deal with that.
And was like, if I tell somebody, he'll be mad. And if you don't tell somebody, he'll probably be dead. Mad or dead. Make up your mind. I will say, though, their little journey of when he first decides he's going to be celibate and she deuces him into a blowjob. I thought, like, oh, that's kind of icky, Jeanette. But also, like, the symmetry between her being seduced into, or not seduced, but manipulated into it, and then her using it to manipulate, obviously is, like, an unhealthy relationship with intimacy in general or whatever. But I was like, yeah, I don't like that either.
Yeah.
It goes both ways.
Yeah.
I've been like, well, we're breaking up. Like, that's the answer. You can go be a born-again Christian with somebody else if that's what you finna do.
Yeah.
And you finna tell me, I'm not going to get up. What? Anyways, that shook me. And I didn't like that she used that.
True.
I didn't like that. But
well, we get to the point where iCarly ended. And we get to that scene with the comatose in the beginning. Where she had just finished shooting her spinoff for Sam and Cat. She starts drinking. She says, when I'm drunk, I'm less anxious, less inhibited. Less worried about mom and what she would want or think of me. In fact, when I'm drunk, the voice of mom judging me evaporates completely. She talks about for 3 weeks straight, she had been drunk every single night.
The amount of alcohol and the types of alcohol she was drinking, like, my chest was burning just thinking about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
My brain couldn't wrap around her literally starving herself. And being so intoxicated and being able to function.
Yeah.
Like, my brain couldn't figure out how she was even walking around.
Mm-mm.
Much less having a conversation with people or driving down the road. I was like, how are you not literally dead? I was really sad, too, when they told her she was going to produce an episode or direct an episode. And they kept bypassing her. And then they did it one final time. And they were like, yep, never mind. You're not doing it.
Well, then the fact they said somebody very important could leave the show. I was like, okay, Ariana.
Yeah, who else? It had to have been. Because who else was more important than her?
Yeah.
And why was it such a big deal that they would leave the show over that?
No idea.
The show was ending anyways.
Yeah.
Everyone was leaving the show because the show ended early.
I'm wondering if it was Ariana, if she just didn't want Jeanette to have her big break.
Maybe she thought they didn't offer her a chance to do it. So maybe she didn't think it was fair if one got to do it, not the other.
Maybe Ariana had asked to do it multiple times and they didn't think she was good enough, so they decided not to offer Jeanette the same.
Yeah.
which is not fair considering they let Ariana have a lot more than what they did Jeanette, at least from Jeanette's point of view.
Yeah, I don't know. I knew I wasn't watching that show, though. I knew that much. I watched Victorious. I didn't really like the cat character in Victorious. I don't like the being an airhead character. I feel like that's partially because it's always a woman that's made into be an airhead.
So mom's died. She starts binging really bad. She starts throwing up food as well after she binges.
I felt really bad when she was talking about like how bad her throat hurt. And like,
oh yeah,
she lost a tooth thrown up one time.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine.
She talks about being sexually assaulted as well whenever some guy named Colton and her...
It was her first time.
Yeah, yes. And her friend had gone back to her place and they end up having sex and she's drunk and she's telling him no.
She two pump jump.
Yeah, she had talked about like, you know, within the next couple of weeks, like possibly losing her virginity to him, but she was not ready yet. Then she starts cycling through stages of anorexia, binge eating, bulimia. Like she starts like fluctuating a whole bunch. And she talks about how like outside she's smaller and gets a lot of compliments, but inside she's falling apart. When she gets denied on the Salmon Cat, where she gets denied doing the production, she ends up having a complete breakdown. And they talk about how someone very important made it clear she didn't want her directing an episode. And so she's at a loss, but she like completely comes together and goes back out and shoots the next scene. And then the grandmother like starts calling her. Yeah, and she has a breakdown. But then the grandmother starts calling her like within a couple days, just completely verbally and emotionally abusive and manipulative. Agreed. She's like just completely starts throwing insults and completely disrespecting her.
I'm saying, didn't she call her while she was in the grocery store?
Yeah, that's this one.
Essentially said she hadn't called her.
Yeah, she just basically neglected her.
My grandkids call me.
To be honest, it was a little triggering with the grandmother because I have that same person in my life that I have now blocked.
Well, I'll beat your grandma.
It was very difficult. Literally, the phone works both ways. Think?
Yeah. But also, take a hint.
She starts having completely dark thoughts as well. She feels like bulimia is completely taken over. She starts drinking every night. Creator, though, at this point has gotten in trouble with the network. He can still be there. He just can't be in the same room as them. After a certain point, the management team informs her that the show has been canceled, and she's kind of relieved by this whole situation. They do tell her that Nickelodeon is trying to give her $300,000 as a parting gift, and basically the condition is she never speak about her experience on the show. She refuses and expresses that she feels like it's hush money, and she's met with silence, and so she kind of learns that business people really don't ever say the truth out loud. So ultimately she ends the call, which she does end up sort of like going down the spiral of like, oh my gosh, that's a lot of money, why did I turn that down?
I enjoyed that. It was just like a real human moment. Yeah. To be like, oh wait a minute,
yeah,
I just turned that down, that's a lot of money.
Well, I know,
didn't even think about it.
That Nickelodeon documentary that was about this whole situation, I know that several of them mentioned they had been offered quite a bit of money. Some of them were a lot more than $300,000 depending on their level, their status, whatever.
Some of the victims themselves might have been offered more.
True.
I mean, don't get me wrong, it sounded like Jeanette also suffered, but there were some sexual assault, I believe, allegations as well.
Yes.
With some of like the young boys, I think it was. So obviously they would have been offered more money.
Yeah.
But I don't want to go into that too deep, but it was fascinating to have that background context while reading this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had watched that quite some time ago, so I didn't remember all of it, but some of her comments kind of triggered what other cast members had said. It was interesting to get that like distinct separation, but like it wasn't just a one person point of view, it was multiple people. But it makes me wonder if she was maybe the catalyst for that situation. I do know there was one girl on Zoe 101, I cannot think of her name right at this moment, but she's a very big advocate for...
I can see her face.
Yeah, I can see her face too, I just can't think of her name. But she's a very big advocate and she speaks out a lot about what happened. I don't know whether she said something first and then Jeanette maybe said something, or Jeanette said something first. I don't know which one was a catalyst, but I feel like those two were two of the front runners that I see or have heard being part of that situation.
Yeah.
But she does start kind of spiraling down the fact that she hates her entire career. She's very bitter, and she does acknowledge, though, that she's very lucky that she was able to do everything, but she also knows that it was her mother's dream and not hers. So she ends up getting casted for a Netflix show, and she ends up thinking, well, she thinks it's a Netflix show, and turns out it's just being distributed by Netflix. So she ends up kind of feeling embarrassed, and honestly, at that point, I kind of felt like she was going to walk away, and then she ended up falling in love with the assistant director at the same time. I appreciated him a lot at the beginning of the relationship because he was trying to encourage her. I feel like he did help her with the perception of sex. I do like that he encouraged her to get help for her bulimia and all that kind of stuff. I do think he did help her in a lot of healthy ways, a lot of unhealthy ways as well. The start of the relationship, it was pretty good. But whenever he does basically give her the ultimatum, she says, "And then I realized that as much as I'm convinced that I need to quit these things, acting, bulimia, alcohol, I don't think I can. As much as I resent them, in a strange way, they define me. They are my identity. Maybe that's why I resent them." And to be honest, at this point, they have been her entire life. I mean, mm-hmm. at least bulimia for sure. But she does start seeing a therapist. But the minute she starts getting anywhere with a therapist and she starts talking about like her mom, she gets really defensive and decides to fire the therapist. She worked through quite a few milestones with that therapist that could have possibly ended up somewhere. But I think that woman didn't have the right approach for her illnesses. They always say you have to shop around for your therapist. Not every therapist can be a good therapist either. And I do think she had the right intentions. I do think she had the right direction, but I don't think Jeanette was ready at that stage in her recovery for that kind of talk. It was very quick. Where the other guy made her work on everything else up to that point, and then
I was gonna say that. He started with her eating disorders,
yeah,
and focused on something that she can actively participate in that treatment, as opposed to just bad mouthing mom.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's what the therapist was intending to do. At some point you do eventually have to talk about mom, yeah, you know, but I do agree that I think starting with her eating disorders first did help it go better.
Well, I think the way he also approached it with, "Why do you think you came to do that?" And she's like, "Oh, well, my mom said that. Why do you think your mom did that?" It was almost like, you tell me the answers instead of me telling you what I'm basically diagnosing your mom with, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I did find that it was super weird how Steven had decided he was going to become all of a sudden a religious person because he watched God's Not Dead on Netflix, which I love that show, by the way. Super good movie.
It put into perspective for me what year it was. That helped me with some context.
Because I remember going with my church group to watch God's Not Dead. I own the movie. I've watched it multiple times. It's a really good movie if you haven't watched it. But it was very weird. Basically, he says that she doesn't need therapy anymore when she says she's quit it because she's got church now and she's got Jesus. So he's like, okay, you're good.
I didn't agree with that.
No, I don't agree with it, but I was also dwelling on the fact is, does he think he's Jesus right now?
He's building up towards,
like, you don't need therapy because I got you because I'm Jesus.
If he had laid his hand on her and tried to heal her, I would have died. I'm going to tell you that. But I have a dark humor. So him thinking he's Jesus coming back or whatever, like, I would have had to have laughed. If I didn't laugh, like, I would have cried, I guess. Because, like, if my boyfriend is sitting across from me at the table and he just told me a couple weeks ago that I don't need therapy because I can go to church, and then he then sits me down and says, "Don't laugh at me, but I think I'm Jesus Christ reincarnated," I'm going to laugh. Because if I don't, I'm having a mental breakdown.
Yeah.
We're both going to be psychotic.
Honestly, I don't know if I would have. I know this sounds really bad, but I don't know if I, like, today, if Trevor came and said that to me and he got admitted and diagnosed, great, going through recovery, whatever, I would almost be afraid to be back in a relationship with him whenever he got out, because I would be afraid that I did something to trigger that situation from happening.
No, this dude was in his 20s, though, I think. So he was in the appropriate age for his first break.
Yes,
So it
but
wasn't
like
something she did. But I get that,
if I
like,
didn't
fear.
know about that kind of stuff, my instant thought would be, oh my God, did I? It didn't say anything about her maybe visiting him in this hospital and learning about his disorder. If I was going to be a part of his life actively and he was living with me, I would want that to happen. At least visit with his therapist. And she taught me how, if he was doing this again, maybe talk about this. None of that conversation happened, which I don't know if that was intentionally left out or if it just never actually happened. But I think it would definitely be important to learn that thing, kind of thing, because whenever he starts spiraling and not wanting to do anything with his life, that would have been a good point for Jeanette to be able to like call up his therapist and saying, hey, like something's happening, like something's wrong with his meds or with him.
I don't personally, especially this relationship, they had been dating for a bit, but they hadn't been in a 10-year relationship. They weren't married. I think I probably would have broken up with him, to be quite frank. I would have wished him well, but she already had so many things that she needed to focus on for herself that the best thing she could have done was break up with him and focus on her.
He didn't want a job. He didn't want to do anything. He just wanted to smoke weed and stare off in space.
I don't care if you enjoy a little weed here and there. I do care if you don't have a job. You got to have a job and you got to be earning some money and you got to be contributing towards your bills. If you are not doing that, you got to go. Absolutely not. We're not doing this. I'm not your mama. So that upset me for her. And then to have that on top of she's literally trying to. And so my thing about it is like, not that like one or the other is worse than the other or like that his issues aren't also important, because that's not what I'm saying. But they were not married. They were not in a position where she had to stay with him. I think it would have been best for her just to call it quits, because she had too much going on. She could not take one more thing. But she stayed with him for a little while, then they broke up. But I would have, after that break, I would have been like, sayonara. I
But
wish you well, but I don't
I
need to be a part of
honestly,
it.
if she was not in therapy at the same time all this was happening, I don't think it would have ended at that point. I think the therapy helped her realize how she had too much on her plate. She couldn't take on something else, and she also couldn't be what he needed because he can't be what she needs in that point in time either.
She'll probably always be grateful to him because he's the one that said get therapy, and that's what started that journey for her. But they just weren't right for each other. They each needed to get, and maybe they were afterward, or the ones that got better and figured out, I don't know. But at that time, they both had to work on things and get better. And that's hard to do on your own, and much less while also trying to manage somebody else handling their own mental health problems. It just was too much.
Well, and whenever her show got canceled, like you would expect that kind of. I mean, it was a huge chunk of her life. So you would kind of expect that to kind of send her a few steps back in her recovery. But I actually think it like slingshotted her further into her recovery because she actually like took it upon herself to be like, no, I'm okay with not doing this anymore. She makes this comment. She says, I want my life to be in my hands, not in eating disorders or a casting director's or an agent's or my mom's, mine. And I think it was a really good, healthy way for her to come to a conclusion that she can be her own person.
I really think that her being able to take that step back and see the bigger picture, like these things are harmful for me, and the relationship in general showed progress, showed what she was achieving in therapy, aside from the eating disorder. And I also really liked that he made it very clear to her that slip-ups are gonna happen, but it doesn't have to be a slide, it can just be a slip-up. I loved that because that is reality. Nobody just stops. With any sort of issues, nobody just stops cold turkey and never has another thought about it. It doesn't work that way. I appreciated that open honesty and perspective on it, because I feel like we look at it like, oh, you go to therapy for 6 months and you're perfectly fine, which is not the reality at all. Most people are in therapy for the rest of their life because things are constantly happening that can add to it or re-trigger it. So I did really appreciate that as well.
Well,
Although I thought it was funny though, like the whole title life coach. I'm always hesitant when someone calls themselves a life coach. I'm always like, Is that because you don't have the credentials to call yourself a doctor? You know what I mean? Yeah. Or a psychologist or whatever. But I liked the life coach. And then I liked the dude, too, afterwards. I got tickled about that.
Well, the part I did hate, which to me, I guess it was just like my childhood, was finding out that Miranda and Jeanette had distanced from each other. Mm-hmm. Like, it kind of hurt me a little bit because I was like, man, like, I was really kind of hoping they were tight through the years, but obviously they both went on to do their own thing. So, I mean, there had to been some kind of like separation. I mean, that's just a natural thing in life. The fact that it also kind of broke me that she wasn't going to be on the reboot, because this was before I read the book. My initial reaction was like, man, why wouldn't she be on there? Why would she not want to be a part of this? And reading the book, I still had that same feeling. From my research, it seemed like they had distanced themselves from a lot of that network Muju juju that was going on. But at the same time, I get where she's coming from. It's just a fact that that was a triggering place for her. I kind of understand the concept of it is the trigger, not exactly the act of it.
She experienced more traumatic things with her mom and in her own home than she probably did on set.
Yeah.
I mean, she experienced traumatic things on set too, but the set itself triggered everything with mom too. I was sad when I first heard that she wouldn't join any, but I do understand why she didn't.
Yeah.
I wish for her sake that she could have enjoyed doing this project as much as I enjoyed watching it. As we get older and become adults, we also have seen multiple other child actors from our childhood have had similar experiences. None of them have really had good ones.
My thought was, I wish that for her, she could have done this reboot as a way of healing herself, particularly distancing herself from that negative thought process, actually doing it for her with the idea of healing herself. I think it would have been healthy for her. Even if she just showed up for one episode, I would want to see if that gives me some peace. Even just a guest star role, because other reboots have people pop in. I think the Wizards of Waverly Place one has Selena pops in every once in a while, but like to me, that was my thought process if I was in her shoes. But obviously her journey is different than my journey. I can't compare and say that's what she should do, but I hope she doesn't throw that option completely off the table, because going back to that place of hurt and pain, it may be healthy to muck through it a little bit to then heal herself from it.
I was proud of her for being able to say, no, thank
Absolutely.
You. That's not right for me.
Especially to a friend, because sometimes it's hard to tell your friends no.
Yes. And because she has been such a people pleaser throughout this entire book. And so finally she learned to set that boundary. And I'm glad that Miranda said, I understand. Thanks for letting me know.
Yeah.
And didn't keep pushing it. Hopefully she didn't do that. But I will say that I can also see the other side of it. She's just really starting to recover.
Yeah.
When it gets brought up, the risk that it will ruin all of her progress.
Yeah, true.
I can see that side too. The moment when she's on her birthday, turns 26, and they're at Disneyland and she's puking in the bathroom, she has that realization, I'm 26 and still doing this, and I don't want to be 27, I don't want to be 30, I don't want to be 35 still doing this at Disneyland. Like, was such a powerful moment for me. My 26th birthday is coming up in a month. And so I just kept thinking, what am I doing still at 26 that needs to be corrected and fixed so that I don't carry it with me in my 30s or whatever. But I did really appreciate at least that she could say, no, I'm not interested, and stick to it.
Yeah.
That was good. I was proud of her.
Well, and she does end up at the very end visiting her mom's grave, and she had promised her to visit every day, which I feel like was just another way of her mom trying to control her.
Was she going to camp there?
I think that's what she expected. But she does end with the fact that they couldn't decide on what should have been on her headstone. She said, my mom didn't deserve her pedestal. She was a narcissist. She refused to admit that she had any problems, despite how destructive those problems were to our entire family. Mom emotionally, mentally, and physically abused me in ways that will forever impact me. And I think that's a good summary. I wish her well in her recovery. It's an ongoing process, and I hope she realizes that she's more than what her mom made her think she is.
Yeah, me too. And as always, we want to thank Jeanette for sharing.
Yeah.
I think it takes a tremendous amount of courage to not only get help and get better, but to share your story and hope that somebody else can heal from it as well.
Yeah.
Take that very seriously.
So, what is your final thoughts and ratings?
Okay, so there is a review on the back of the book that I think sums up my thoughts. I'm going to read it and let you hear that. Okay. And it was by Lauren Hugh, who is an author that wrote Leaving Isn't the Hardest Thing, evidently. I'm not familiar with her, but these are her words. I'm glad my mom died is furious, sad, brave, knowing, honest, heart-wrenching, and utterly compelling. McCurdy writes with a keen insight and startling compassion. Whether showing how dysfunction can seem normal to those most affected, the torture of eating disorders, or the mind F that is child stardom, McCurdy brings readers deep into the milieu so often hidden from outsiders. This is a beautifully crafted coming-of-age story as fearless as its author. I wholeheartedly agree. This book takes tremendous courage to admit to yourself what you've been through, to work on it, do better, try to be better, face it, and then share it with other people so they can hopefully relate and get better as well. Flattered and honored that I get to read it and experience the journey with her. I 1000% listening to it on the audiobook is such an intimate experience with her reading it that you highly recommend that you should listen to it. And it's not that big of a book either.
You said so it was like 10 and a half hours.
No, I think it was 6.5.
Yeah.
But if you feel like you can emotionally listen to it, I think you should, 1000%. This book is definitely a 5 out of 5 for me. And I normally wait until now to rate it. I didn't have to do that. Even in the middle of it, I was like, it's a 5.
Yeah.
I can't listen to somebody else's trauma and be like, oh no, it's a 3. Because she should have done this in the book better. Would I have liked some more information? Yes. But it is her autobiography. So first of all, I'm not going to tell her how to tell her story. No. But second of all, her mom's dead. So I can't get her mom's autobiography to know more about her childhood and her perspective. But gosh, it would be fascinating to do so. But yes, so that's my thoughts. That's my ratings. What are yours?
My ranking system starts at 3 and goes up and down from there. But I would probably give it a 4.5. I enjoyed a lot of the story. It did interest me to read it all. To be honest, it was a little triggering, which is why I can't give it all the way, because like to me there were some parts, and I know this sounds bad, but I almost give it one like a 0.5 because the mom was so terrible as well. Like I know that's not fair to Jeanette and her writing, but it was so hard to read some of those moments that it didn't make it as enjoyable in some of those moments because it was just terrible to read. But I understand that's the point of the book. For me, it was hard to get through some of those points, especially whenever she talked about the sexual assaults and stuff like that. Honestly, I have so much compassion for her and for the fact that she went through everything she did and had nobody in her corner for the most part. I had high hopes that the last guy was going to be in her corner, and unfortunately he needed more people in his corner at some point than she could be. But I just I don't know, it's a very sad story, and I hate that, but I'm really happy that she's found herself or on a journey of finding herself, and hopefully that goes good for her and she continues on the recovery path. And honestly, I would like to read, because I think this, what I've seen was this was like the 20, or the book I have is the 2022 updated version. So I don't know if she's adding to this as she goes, but it is interesting to see that possibly she may update it again in the future.
Yeah, mine's a 22 version. It doesn't say updated though, but it does say 22. No, I agree. I would love to read a part 2, even if it was more about her childhood, like more about her brothers. And she dedicates this to her brothers. That's always interesting to me as well. It sounded like she still had contact with them at the end of it. She said she'd seen her older brother and his wife. If you guys liked this episode or any of our other episodes, please subscribe to get access to bloopers randomly throughout each month on the 5th Friday, if there is one. We also have extra content, a community chat, and more on Patreon. You can find our free episodes on the 1st and 3rd Fridays of each month on any podcasting platform.
You can send us book suggestions, comments, or general inquiries to our email at likewereadthem@carlmpodcast.com. You can also subscribe on our Patreon to get our monthly newsletter. You can also join us on Fable, Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram for more engagement from us and the latest news. Carl, do you want to let them know what our next read is?
So on January 17th, 2025, we will be discussing I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings by Maya Angelou. And the blurb for that book is, here is a book as joyous and painful, as mysterious and memorable as childhood itself. I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings captures the longing of lonely children, the brute insult of bigotry, and the wonder of words that can make the world right. Maya Angelou's debut memoir is a modern American classic beloved worldwide. Sent by their mother to live with their devout grandmother in a small southern town, Maya and her brother endure the ache of abandonment and prejudice. At 8 years old and back at her mother's side in St. Louis, Maya is attacked by a man many times her age and has to live with the consequences for a lifetime. Years later, in San Francisco, Maya learns that love for herself, the kindness of others, her own strong spirit, and the ideas of great authors will allow her to be free instead of imprisoned. Poetic and powerful, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings will touch hearts and change minds for as long as people read. Super excited about this book. This is also an audiobook that she reads, if you're interested in doing that journey as well. And don't forget to join us over on Fable so we can chat as we read along. And as always, we promise to Carlum like we read them.